Marvel's Daredevil Season 2, Episode 11, 380 is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recap, Week 3, the final week of the Daredevil podcast here for Season 2. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, and to close this thing out, or to start closing this thing out, we are going to need all of the coffee that you could possibly pump out. So, Kevin, let's start drinking up. Kevin Mahadeo, what's going on?
Drinking a lot of coffee. That is actually my habit, like... Coming from the world of journalism, it's just like coffee addiction is real. And so like when you it's see real. People like Allison and Karen with drinking coffee, I'm like, yep, that's about right.
I drink a big pot of coffee every day just to the face. I drink it iced coffee. I drink it as iced coffee because I just need to power through it as quickly as possible. And I'm done with like a big like 7-cup pot of coffee by the end of the day. Sometimes some of it is left over, but more often than not, it's straight to the dome.
Yeah, no, I drink a lot. I try to cut down, but like it's gotten to the point now where in the morning when I make coffee at work, it's always like the regular cup, but then I also throw in an espresso shot. Like that is my morning cup. Is basically a red eye. Like the red eye, as they call it. I need that espresso shot in there because it does nothing otherwise.
The red eye. Now I'm just thinking about the movie Red Eye.
Ah, with Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, and Colby Donaldson.
What? Yeah, Colby was in that?
Yeah, go check that out again.
Oh God, no! I need to rewatch it. Yeah. I will admit, I was like half asleep when that movie was on. And was paying very little attention.
Great movie. Not for nothing. Also, I think Cillian Murphy would be a great Bullseye if they ever wanted to bring Bullseye into the show.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. He'd be one of those crossover actors who's doing both DC and Marvel. Did both DC and Marvel.
Yeah, it doesn't count anymore. Scarecrow's up. Scarecrow. All right, well, let's start
talking. Batman.
Let's start talking. Hey, there's our Batman reference. Oh, we've been getting really good at just like offloading the Batman stuff at the start of the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, two more podcasts to go with Batman references. I know we will not disappoint. But let's start talking Daredevil. Start talking 380, episode 11. Only three more episodes left here in season two of Daredevil. Before we came on here, Kevin, you and I were saying, like, I wonder if this is going to be a short podcast because this is kind of just a chess pieces episode.
Yeah, no, for sure. This is kind of like, I forgot what episode I referred to before was similar, where it was like, it was a great episode, but like a lot of just basically moving pieces into position, hence the chess pieces thing. But yeah, definitely feels that way. There are some cool things, though. There are some cool moves that were made during this, chess setup. But yeah, overall, I think it was mainly exactly that, a setup episode.
100%. Yeah, there's a lot of really great scenes in here. But in terms of major plot development, we're closer to the stuff, but the stuff didn't quite happen in this one. I mean, stuff happened, but the stuff did not quite happen.
Yeah, there's definitely some things they're setting up that I'm questioning. I mean, we'll see how they play it out and what they do, but I don't know. I'm curious to see where this goes. It deals at the end of, like, near the end of the episode.
All right, great. Well, bring that stuff up. I know you will.
As
we get through it, we are going to start diving into this right now. And the episode begins the way that the last episode ended. And how could it not? Like, if this episode had started with anything but epic ninja battle, I would have been pretty furious.
Yeah, no. It starts off with awesome ninja fighting. Matt doing actually some very Batman things. Sorry that we did the reference earlier, but there's definitely a moment where I'm like, that is so Batman.
It's funny. I actually had a Batman thought of my own, but not with Matt, not with Daredevil, but with the Hand, because the perspective is from the Hand when we begin the episode. You hear the alarms blaring. You see the Hand ninjas. They're climbing up the building. You're getting it from their perspective as they're like slowly cutting the hole into the window. And it's like, for me, this is like why you don't see this stuff when Batman does it, because it takes away some of the mystery. It busts away some of the mystery. Like when you play Arkham Asylum or the Arkham games, you get to be Batman and you get to do that stuff, and it's very fun. But in a cinematic story, you don't want to see Batman like scaling the thing and very slowly cutting a hole into a thing and then very slowly walking into the building. You just want him to be there. And that's kind of how I feel about the Hand ninjas. Like, I didn't need to see the Hand ninjas process. It kind of demystifies the Hand a little bit to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. To a certain extent, I can see that. But like, the Hand aren't Batman. You know, Daredevil's Batman in this situation. So we get to see him doing his, you know, like from the shadows kicky punchy thing.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that, you know, the hand has that aspect, too, where they work best when they are in the shadows.
Well, yeah, they're supposed to be ninjas.
Yeah, you know, so I don't need to see, like, the ninja process. You know, I don't need, I don't need to know the ninja process. I just need to know that the ninjas are good. And then on top of it, like, if that was how they were going to storm the building and, you know, you see how much labor goes into that, they probably could have just gone in the front door.
No, that's not how ninjas work. Ninjas don't use front doors. They only use side doors.
Maybe
or doors
modern maybe modern ninjas I would assume would use an elevator once in a while.
just standing there, the one guy in the corner in a suit just staring at the ninjas all standing there in ninja gear with their swords and weaponry.
As the Muzak is playing.
Yeah, that like
are you a ninja?
Yeah, I am.
You guys got any coffee? Yeah, third floor. Okay, sweet.
Cool, thanks. I'm just going to get off there. Have fun.
Yeah. Oh, man, the ninja elevator is a very uncomfortable situation to be in. That's like,
I love it.
That's a great philosophical concept, the ninja's elevator.
Yeah, how do you? What do you do when?
What do you do when a ninja steps into an elevator? But things really heat up here, and poor Louisa, you know.
Yeah, I know. She just gets trying to protect Claire. You were worried about Claire. You should not have been worried about Claire.
No, I should have been worried about Claire because if poor Louisa, not Brigitte, if she hadn't stepped in the way of Claire in the hand, then Claire would have been skewered like a kebab.
Yeah, that's true, but that's why it's okay to be for Claire, because she's got people who are going to die instead of her, I guess.
Plot armor?
That was plot armor, I guess. That was brutal. That was sad, though. And, like, that, what I like, though, it wasn't just plot armor for her, because we see all of this come back later on in this episode. Like, there are, you know, ramifications for her and, like, character motivation things that happen through this that I can appreciate. It's not just like, she's safe because this rando died, and then we never heard about it again.
Right. Yeah, this rando nando.
Yeah,
we get like an actual story for Claire in this episode. It took 11 episodes of the season, but Claire has actually got like her own story right now.
Yeah, which I like. I like that, you know, that the show is kind of trying to focus up on the characters and give, especially like there was criticism last season that the female characters were lacking their own, like, you know, their own story and own you know, motivations and stuff like that. And for here, I think they're doing a good job remedying a lot of those complaints.
Yeah, I think that might have contributed to this episode feeling a little slow, though, in terms of, like, the plot movement, is that there's a lot of focus on characters, or at least the Claire storyline that really hadn't been a thing, and now suddenly it's a thing, and it's kind of like, do I care if this is a thing? And the reason that I do care is because I really like Claire. So I'm ultimately fine with it, but I think that contributes to the episode feeling a little bit slower, that there's a lot of emphasis on Claire and trying to cover up this, you know, or trying to like not cover up this thing that's going on at the hospital and sticking to her guns and everything like that. Yeah,
but I also, you know, I definitely see where you're coming from, and I can agree with it. But it's also, to me, it was also set up for stuff later, not necessarily in Daredevil, but again, I think Claire is going to be the Agent Coulson and show up in like Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and this kind of sets her up to do so.
Yeah.
You know, I think it works well, but it also has problems because it feels like almost like it somewhat doesn't belong in there. So I can understand why you felt that way for sure.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, so Claire shows up. She's got like security with her because she saw all of those vampires, not vampires, the vampire kids in the last episode. And so she's like, all right, we got to get security up in here. By the way, I can't believe that vampires is a real thing. I did do a little bit of a look at vampires, since we last talked, Kevin, and that's unfortunate stuff.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
It's unfortunate.
It's ridiculous.
Stuff. Unfortunate stuff. Claire brings security over and
they're
like,
really effective. They're super effective.
She gets there and like there's, you know, there's the vampire kids on one side of her and then suddenly like all these ninjas there as well. And it's kind of just like, oh, great. Like as if this couldn't have gotten weirder. Now there's just an army of ninjas in front of me. And yeah, they kill poor Louisa, not Brigitte. And it's very, very sad.
Yeah, and then don't they throw Claire out a window?
Yeah, well, Daredevil shows up. He's fighting them. He has to do that thing where he has to wait for the hand to use their weapons so that he can hear them. Otherwise, he's not able to because they're super ninjas and his super hearing doesn't really
that's
work.
Right. You know what? I actually forgot about that plot point, and I hate myself for forgetting it because that's awesome that they brought that back in with this. That's some clever storytelling.
Yeah, that's why he's just standing there.
Yeah. I thought he was just being dramatic. This makes a lot of sense now.
He's not being dramatic. He's like, crap, it must be ninjas. I can't hear anything.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, you know, only when the hand are using objects is when he can, when he can make moves against them. But yeah, he's fighting them, and Claire pushes a ninja out the window. She throws one of them out the window, and one of the, like, that guy's friend must have been like, no!
Yeah, doesn't she, like, take, like, a chair or something and, like, throw it at him because he's trying to come in or something?
Yeah.
Like, she definitely gets a guy, which is the right move. It's like one of those things where they're, like, climbing up ladders in like, medieval movies. You just, like, push the ladder, you know?
Yeah.
It just falls over. So, I like that she's being effective.
Yeah, so she pushes a ninja out the window, and then one of the ninjas is like, that was my friend!
And that was, like, in Star Wars, where it's, like, wicked, you know, and, like, the one Ewok dies, and the other one's like, no! And sadness.
Yeah. So this is, it's like her throwing Wicked out the window.
Yeah. No. Yes, exactly.
No, I think Wicked is the one that threw her out the window, and the one that got thrown out the window was just like the rando that got blasted by the AT-AT. But she throws that guy out the window. Wicket throws her out the window. Daredevil's like, no! And Daredevil, he smashes out the window and saves her.
This is the Batman moment, I mean. Like, it's very Batman-y, where, because Batman's done this where, like, the person's falling, then he, like, jumps out and has to, like, grappling hook up the side of it, then grabs him and smashes him through another floor window. It's a very Batman thing.
I know this is, like, a Dark Knight moment. That's what he does with Rachel Dawes when Joker tosses her out the thing. But is this Batman's exclusive domain? Is this Batman's... this can only be Batman's move, that he can jump out the window and save a person? I feel like other people have to have that.
I mean, sure, but the use of the grappling hook, because, like, that back claw thing is kind of his.
Yeah.
And, like, Daredevil does a similar thing, but using his sticks, you know? So,
well,
I kind of give it a Batman swing on that. But, again, no complaints. It's an awesome-looking scene.
The Batman swing sounds like something else.
It's just what he needs to do sometimes when he feels sad. He just sits in the swing, and Alfred just pushes him.
Oh, that's where you were going. Okay, I was thinking something else as well.
What were you thinking?
Yeah, don't worry about it. The Batman swing of my mind is a little dirtier.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Batman is up to some stuff.
Oh, you went to wrong places, Josh.
Yeah, I went to some weird places. But Batman, he saves Claire. Batman saves Claire. Now I'm full Batman. But blind Batman saves Claire. Daredevil saves Claire. Daredevil, he goes back into pursuit, but the ninjas are just too good. They run off. They've got all the kids with them, and no good. All of this was for nothing.
Yeah, but at the same time, get those creepy children out of here. I don't. They're off-putting.
I know. We know how you feel about demon vessels.
Yeah, I don't like them.
You drew a hard stance on that.
Yes. It's controversial, but I am against demon vessels. Sorry.
Well, these kids, like, I'm with you now, man. Like, I'm Team Kevin when it comes to the demon vessels, because it seems like they love being demon vessels.
Oh, yeah, they seem real into it.
They're like, oh, sweet, our ninja friends are here. Let's go back to being demon vessels.
Yeah, and then they, you know, eliminate themselves later by providing the rest of their blood, I guess.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on with these guys.
Creepiness is what's going on.
Creepiness is what's going on. The next day, Matt, outside of his Daredevil costume, he's at the hospital with Claire, and he's telling her, like, what happened. He's like, yeah, there's this group called The Hand. They're pretty badass. They believe in some weird shenanigans, but they're rich, so it's dangerous.
It's just so typical Matt, too, right? Because it's like, hey, please take care of these people, and I know that's a hassle, but not warn them. Also, there is a highly skilled organization of immortal ninjas that can possibly come after you. And then they do, of course, and then all this crap happens, and it's like, yeah, sorry about that.
Well, in his defense, when he brought the vampire kids, not vampire kids, to Claire, didn't he say, by the way, there are going to be people that are probably coming after you?
I mean, there's people, but there's also then immortal ninjas.
Right, it's not quite people. It's not a one.
Yeah, as we see, some of these ninjas already had autopsies performed on them, which is weird.
I know, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So you think that he should have been like, and they're not just people, they're like really good killer people.
Yeah, it's just rough. I mean, that's why he was there, obviously, like, guarding the place, you know, because he was concerned. But, like, poor Claire. I just feel bad for her, because it's like, this dude just throws the situation on her. She's just a person. She's just trying to do her job, you know? And here comes Daredevil doing all this crap constantly.
Yeah, you know, not for nothing, too. It's like, when he warned her about that, you would like to think that the security in the hospital, beyond Daredevil, would have been closer. Like, Claire having to be, like, going down the hall and bring the security people down the hall with her.
Yeah, as opposed to them being there already, so they're already, on guard.
Yeah, so that poor Stan, not Stewart, didn't have to die for anything.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to get that far.
Yeah. Well, R.I.P. Stan, not Stewart.
Yeah, that would have been helpful. Claire says, you're burning the candle at both ends, and sooner or later, it's going to fizzle out. And the problem with martyrs is that the good ones end up dead. It's one thing to take on the mob or block a shady real estate deal, but you're in over your head. And I have in my notes, Matt, this would be a great time to call the Avengers. You know, like, that's the that's the thing about where we are. You know, when you have a show like Daredevil that exists within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I think that this is the one thing that people pull on when it comes to the shared universe of Marvel, is like, this is the hand. Daredevil is now dealing with a bunch of people that are undead or resurrected or supernatural something or other, and he is trying to take them all on by himself. He knows that there are other people out there like him. Why not call upon the services of somebody else out there? Obviously, the answer is because of real-world contract things, but in-universe, why wouldn't he be like, hey, Captain America, I know you don't know who I am. You may have read about me. I'm that guy in the newspaper in New York, the Devil of Hell's Kitchen. I'm a pretty cool, almost ninja type of dude, and I could really use your help dealing with some actual ninja types of dudes.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick. Do you think he just has Steve Rogers' number on speed dial? Like, how easy do you think it is for a regular guy, Matt Murdock, to get a hold of Captain America?
Not impossible. I think that
I think it's as difficult, if not harder, than getting in contact with Chris Evans as a normal person.
I don't think that that is true at all. For Matt Murdock, first of all, is not a normal person. He is Daredevil. He is resourceful. We see him do things like put detective skills to use, another Batman trait. But I think that what he really excels in is he is a well-connected lawyer and stuff, where he even says to Kingpin in the last episode that one $6 postage and Vanessa will never set foot in America ever again. If he can make something like that happen, I feel like Matt Murdock could do the research and find out how to get in touch with the Avengers. I just feel
It's
not that hard.
I think it is kind of hard if you're just like, I feel like that's lawyer connections that he could do. That's like legal stuff, legal kung fu he could probably do. Or he might have been bluffing, but like, I just feel like trying to get a hold of the event, like trying to get a hold of Tony Stark or Steve Rogers, is not a simple feat. Unless
you don't think the Avengers have a website, you don't think that they at least have a contact us form.
No, and also, I mean, like, obviously this is a big deal, but we're also looking at an organization that is super secret and super hidden. They have evidence, quote unquote, of this attack on this particular hospital that's going on that eventually it even gets covered up. So even if, you know, the one evidence they have gets to go away now. And like the Avengers, yeah, sure, this is a big deal because we know it's a big deal, but if you're talking to the Avengers, it's like, what do you mean ninjas? Like, we're just fighting an artificial AI intelligence that tried to take over the world and destroy an entire city.
They're not just ninjas. Like, they're undead ninjas. These are ninjas died and they're back to life.
But there's no proof. Like, that's the thing. It's hard to convince, you know, like, the Avengers are busy people to be like, this is a thing, and to convince them of that and to know, you know what I mean? There's no proof for it. And,
can't
like,
they
for them,
spare,
they're busy.
Can't they spare Avenger, like, can't they like send Ant-Man?
Yeah, but he's not
Hawkeye.
Part of the team.
It's like, all right, Hawkeye, this is what you're here for. Go
I will say that they could probably have spared Hawkeye.
Go
Ant-Man's
on, Hawkeye. And Hawkeye's
yet,
like,
so.
Why me? Is it because I'm human and I'm not really a superpowered person? Are you just stereotyping me? Yeah, Hawkeye.
Well,
that's exactly
Hawkeye also,
what we're doing.
Didn't he retire though at the end of Age of Ultron? Wasn't that the whole thing that he was
fair
done?
Enough, fair enough.
So
maybe
yeah,
they don't have
what
Avengers
now, Josh?
They don't have Avengers to spare. Fine. Talk about like the how difficult it's going to be to get the Avengers there, but could you at least agree now would be a great time to call the Avengers if we could do it?
if it was possible to get a hold of them, yes, probably.
Maybe at least call Jessica Jones. This would be a nice time for a Jessica Jones cameo.
That I could say, like, yeah. if he could get a hold, because he knows of these people existing. If he could get a hold of Jessica,
and that's not hard. I mean,
someone else.
Claire knows Jessica Jones.
Yeah, she knows Luke Cage, too.
Yeah, shouldn't Claire be like, you're in over your head. I know two people that would be useful to you right now.
Yeah, that I think is something that I will give you, that yes, this probably would have been a good time for that.
Yeah, Matt's got to stop doing this thing on his own, and he needs some backup.
But he is stubborn, so I can see why he even then would have been like, no, I'm going to do this. This is my burden to bear. I'm a martyr.
Yeah, he is. So we go to the police station. Karen Page is there. We kind of just like yada yada to there. You know, we didn't really see how she got there, but we assume that Frank was like, go to the police station, buy me some time. But she's given a statement. She hasn't mentioned Frank Castle's name whatsoever. Matt shows up there and they have kind of an awkward conversation because that's really the only type of conversation these two have anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's the best part of the show right now.
Yeah. But Matt's like, I heard from Brett like that you got shot at last night. Why didn't you call me? And she's like, because you're not my boyfriend, Matt. Stop stalking me.
That's so ridiculous. Yeah. It's all just so, it's so like, I don't know. There's just a level of cliche-ness that I'm just kind of like, come on, guys. I know you're better than this.
I also have in my notes, Matt, you suck right now. Because like, Matt is being such a jerk right now. He's being such a bonehead talking about how like, oh, so you're not telling the cops about Frank? Really good. That's smart, Karen. It's like, Matt, look in the mirror. I mean, I know you can't, but you know, just consider yourself right now. You're doing a lot of things that people are telling you are dumb things to do. Get off your high horse. Don't yell at Karen Page for doing what Karen Page is doing.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, I mean, this is, I felt the season is really starting to lead into, like, the Matt Murdock being kind of a jerk.
Yes, thing. 100%.
And I kind of like it because it is like, you know, he's not perfect. He's not, sure, he has this high moral of, like, I don't kill and everything like that, which I think is part of the character, but the character is also kind of a jerk. I mean, not to say that, you know, like, there's obviously a level of superiority in his mind, I feel like, but it's weird because he's both humble and egotistical at times, and I kind of love that he has this dichotomy and this kind of jerkiness to the character.
Yeah. I mean, he's great because he is that martyr type, and it's really compelling to watch him try and take on the situation by himself, and you know that he can't just do it completely on his own. Or maybe he can, and that will be incredibly badass to see. But assumedly not without cost.
Right.
So it's cool to watch him doing all that, but at the same time, in his human-to-human interactions, you really are just siding with every single person who is not Matt Murdock in those conversations.
Yeah, I know, for sure, because he is a bit of a jerk. Yeah. Although, again, I felt like at this point, it's well beyond, but if they had just had a quick conversation, and I feel like this issue between Karen and Matt at least could not have this weird dramatic tension to it.
Yeah, well, maybe a conversation is going to come up because we'll see that later in the episode. There's a conversation about Matt and Karen. Frank has some interesting advice. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But Karen, she goes to the Travel Inn. She's supposed to have the security detail of these two cops that are posted outside, and she's like, "Oh, don't worry about me. I'm going to sleep for 12 hours. I'm just going to pass right out." They're like, "Okay, cool. We'll be downstairs." And yeah. as soon as they go into the elevator. I assume not the ninja elevator. She like just like walks out immediately, and it's like these cops are the worst cops.
Oh yeah, we established before they're the worst.
Really
like
bad.
When Reyes got killed, it's just like you guys suck.
Yeah, really bad. Come on, like just like could you not like stay outside her room for 10 minutes?
No, not no. Just,
had to leave.
Just stroll on out there.
Had to leave immediately. But she leaves and she goes outside and Frank Castle is waiting for her in her own car.
Yeah, which is also really great because it's like, yeah, once again, like, isn't the police looking for this man and they can't find him right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just
right there.
Yeah, it's insane how
in her car. No one has their eye on like her car to make sure that no one's like putting a bomb on it or something.
There already was an attack on her life, and it's just kind of like, yeah, no, we've never seen movies where they blow up cars, so let's just don't even bother.
Yeah, she doesn't drive much. It'll be fine. We'll be driving her around everywhere anyway, so she's not even gonna get in there for a few days at least.
The worst police,
really bad police. Frank is in there. He's listening to some Earth, Wind, and Fire. He's like, oh, man, I love Shining Star.
It's great.
Shining bright to see.
It's not her music, though.
Shining Star for you to see. Yeah, he's like, it's a good song. We used to sing this in the Castle household. It was great. Can you imagine me doing that? It's like, no, I really can't.
I just love that it's, that this is clearly Ben Urich's music taste, which is phenomenal.
Is that what it is?
Well, because it's her car, right? Like, I felt like that was, it wasn't just a radio. I thought it was like a CD or something that she had.
So she's just been trolling through Ben Urich's disc collection?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious.
That's incredible.
That's how I read that scene anyway.
I like that. I like that. Listen, the ghost of Ben Urich, he continues to hang heavy over this show.
Yeah, I miss him. But
I miss him, too.
I'm glad that they are doing the good stuff with Karen, like taking that torch. As I've mentioned many times, I really like how they're handling it.
Yeah, it's fun. So she's going to go off with Frank. They're going to do some stuff. We'll get into all of that later. Before we do any of that, there's some hospital shenanigans that we should talk about. First, the return of Marcy. Marcy is back with Foggy Bear.
Foggy Bear! I love Marcy. I love her. I love her. Just keep them together forever. I really like the Foggy. I'm all about what would the Farsi, I guess.
Yeah, I think we called Farsi. We called him Moggy Bear once upon a time.
Yes, Moggy Bear. Yes, I'm all about Moggy Bear.
But she's come back and she's like, hey, I brought you a bear and you got shot. How's that going? And he's
yeah.
like, well, it's not great. On top of that, my firm is closed down. And because, you know, these things come in threes, I'm expecting that Josie's is going to be shut down as well. And she says, that wouldn't be the worst news.
Yeah, well, we know they're old olives and terrible food that they have there. So, I'm surprised it's not, but just for health code reasons.
Josie's never impressed Marcy much.
No. I mean, do you see what type of classy lady Marcy is?
Very classy lady.
Yeah, no, I'm a big, like I said, big fan of her. I love that, you know, she's actually there for a reason, and she brings up that despite them not winning that case, he turned a few heads and he's perked up some ears because, as I've said, Foggy is a very good lawyer, yes. Much better than Matt.
Yeah. Antonio Mazzaro, who is the actual lawyer here around these post-show recaps parts, he agrees with you. He tweeted
yeah.
it and said something like, I am by no means Team Foggy, but he is a much better lawyer than Matt. Basically because Foggy is present, and that counts. You know, that counts for everything. So I will concede on the issue. Anytime Antonio says a thing, I will back him up because he's a smarter man than I am.
Yeah.
I will take his side over yours, Kevin.
That's understandable.
You son of a... All right, so we have that going on, but she wants to set Foggy up with a new job, and we don't know what that's going to be. We know that in the past, from season one, Marcy has worked with some shady characters before. I hope that this isn't a shady thing that she's talking about.
I hope not either. I don't want to consider that. Again, I like Marcy. I'm hoping she's on the up and up now.
Well, what's interesting is... You know, she works, doesn't she work with Hogarth from Jessica Jones?
I thought that she's not.
She mentioned earlier that we have like a vigilante in my office named Jessica Jones in the first scene that she was in earlier in the season. I think that she works with Hogarth.
Okay. Did they open up? Because I thought, I'm trying to remember now, because I know that she... Marcy used to work for the firm that...
Oh, yeah, they busted, you know, Union Allied. They
yeah, okay, so
thing.
She left there, and now she works for Hogarth,
I think
which
so.
Is actually pretty cool. I like that connection here.
I'm pretty sure that that's the case. So what if Marcy gets Foggy a job with Hogarth, and if there isn't, you know, a Daredevil Season 3 before The Defenders, that's one way to kind of start tying those stories together.
I kind of like that, and it makes sense, right? Like, the whole reason why Foggy... especially would get this recognition is that they were trying to defend a vigilante, and Hogarth is also doing the same with Jessica. So if they need someone with legal experience and expertise who has previously defended a vigilante, why not go to Foggy? Which makes perfect sense.
I think that could be where we're going. And then Marcy and Foggy would be working together. Wouldn't that be cute?
Yeah, and then they'll be making out together, and it'll be wonderful and amazing.
I liked when Foggy's like, oh, I thought you were coming here to take advantage of me in my fragile state. And she goes, no, Franklin, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. I love Marcy. Great character.
Yeah, no, she's great. I love
great
it.
Character. Really fun. All right, so now let's get into the weird stuff with Claire, and she sees that, you know, this ninja, the man from the hand who she killed, who she pushed out the window, he has a Y-shaped cut in him that's, like, clearly from a previous autopsy. Like, this is a guy who has been gutted like a fish. He has been dead before. This is weird.
Yeah, it really brings into question how they run the whole immortal thing and what exactly it means. Like, are they lifeless husks? Are they demon shells?
Yeah, they're demon vessels themselves.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see, like, what's going on there. I like that the rest of the hospital staff and I guess he'd be the hospital administrator is just kind of like, nope, not, don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
And basically tries to cover it up.
The administrator sucks, by the way.
Yeah, they usually do. And if I've learned anything from House, well, no, Cuddy's not that bad. But the higher-ups are usually not
that
great.
It doesn't always have to be that way in reality, but typically, like, in fiction, that tends to be the case.
Yo, yeah. There's something like people, I mean, like, I think in fiction people really like the idea of knowing that the higher-ups are corrupt, I guess, and there's something bad there, because it's relatable. Like, a lot of people aren't the higher-ups. Like, that is a small percentage of people. So we relate more to the people looking up at them and being like, ah, this company, you know, if it was run properly, we all been there.
Yeah. In my notes, I was calling this guy Walter Peck, who is the...
How dare you try to explain who Walter Peck is to me?
Not to you, for people who don't know, who is the guy who is the bad guy in the first Ghostbusters movie, who is constantly trying to shut down the Ghostbusters, and Peter has to be like, don't shut it off. I'm warning you.
Yeah.
And he does.
That, you know, not for nothing on that. Yes, he was a dick, and certainly he was a jerk, and his reasons were clearly motivated by own personal bias, but he's not wrong. These people are using unlicensed nuclear weaponry on their person and have, this weird environmental, you know, drain in their office that they do not share information about. He didn't come from nowhere, poor Mr. Walter Peck, but he was a dick.
He was a jerk. He was a jerk. And I hear all of your points, but if not the Ghostbusters, then who? Ghostbusters, easier to get in contact with than the Avengers.
Oh, yeah, they have a phone number you can call directly. Yeah.
It's in their theme song. Who are you going to call?
Yeah, the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's not in the Avengers song. I don't think the Avengers even have a song. Let's start there, you know?
Yeah, first, theme song.
Who are you going to call? The Avengers?
Who needs to assemble? The Avengers need to assemble.
Yeah, so we'll start there. But this is very strange stuff that the hand have, you know, even their like minions seem to be husks. I thought that it was just a Nobu thing and that all these people were sacrificing their blood so a guy like Nobu could come back to life. But no, it seems like this is being used on like even just like the smallest members of the Foot Clan.
Yeah, the Hand Clan, you mean?
Yeah, the Hand Clan. So that's interesting. That's interesting.
No, for sure. It makes me wonder if Nobu also suffered the same thing, but Nobu talks a lot. These guys were very silent, so... Oh, man, this is why they don't have a heartbeat.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This is why Matt can't read their heartbeat either.
That helps. That helps. That definitely would help, because if they're just, like, reorganizing things inside of their bodies, maybe they don't need the heart.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I love it. So many questions. I hope we get answers.
And hey, since we're getting into technicalities anyway, if these guys don't have hearts or if they were killed once before and they're not really super alive now, can't Daredevil kill these guys? Does this count? We could just probably kill these people, right?
Maybe. I mean, that could be a loophole for sure.
It's a legal loophole.
It's a legal loophole for murder.
Yeah,
he's dead already, so I didn't kill him. He's undead now, so undead. Really. Yeah, I'm unaliving him is what I'm doing.
Unaliving him. All right, so we leave the hospital. We rejoin Blake Tower, who I wasn't necessarily sure we were going to see again unless it was part of maybe a blacksmith reveal, but it is part of a blacksmith conversation. Daredevil shows up. He pins Blake Tower in an alleyway and gets him to say everything that he possibly knows about the blacksmith. I'm still not out on the theory that Blake could be involved with the blacksmith, if not be the blacksmith himself.
No, I kind of agree with you. Once you said that theory, now I've been looking for it. And this is again, it still works out. He's still here. He's on the way to leave. But again, that just could be him, you know, going underground as he does his blacksmithing.
Yeah, so I think that's possible. Or if he's, you know, going underground, or if he's going to meet with some people, who knows? You know, who knows what he's off to do? But he does give Matt, you know, a name of the person that he should be looking at. You know, he says, like, you should be looking at the blacksmith's number one rival, and that person happens to be in Chinatown. And at that point, you know, we're going to get into Madame Gao in a little bit, but at that point, it's like, oh, sweet.
I knew.
Madame Gao's coming back.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, man, I hope it's Madame Gao, and it was, and I was very excited to get a guest, Gao Fury.
Gao Fury. I forgot about Gao Fury. Yeah, Flavortown is kicking once again.
She certainly is kicking up the flavor with her drinks these days.
Yeah, she is. But Madame Gao is going to be back in the mix, and I wish that I had planted the flag in the last podcast when we were talking about Blake Tower as a possible suspect in the blacksmith thing, because I was thinking, but I didn't say it out loud, that what if Madame Gao is the blacksmith? I mean, she's somebody that we know deals in drugs and stuff and slavery and all of these things, and we know that she's physically powerful. We saw how she punched Matt in season one and just like knocked him across the room. Could she possibly be it? I feel like unless they're doing something where she's like both you know, running the Chinatown thing and also is responsible for this other heroin enterprise, which would be hard to understand why that would be the case. I think we can rule her out, but at the very least, it's cool to have her back on the show.
For sure. And I do not think she's running both at all. She just wants to paint her paintings, Josh. She is an artist now. This is her, you know, escape from all this madness.
But a very nice bush right over here.
Yeah.
Gowross. Yeah. That's the new Gow Fury.
Yeah. She's calmed down a bit. Now she's Gowross. Yeah. Just trying to paint a happy little bush over here.
Yeah, we're
going to
paint a happy little tree right here in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Right here in Chinatown. While we're on the subject, though, of taking shots in the dark at who the blacksmith could be, because I regret not making that comment about Gao in the last podcast, is we're looking for ways for the stories to tie together. Like, we're looking for ways for the hand story to tie in with what the Punisher is after, which Matt is now after as well, because he's chasing this down because of what happened to Karen, and he's now invested in the blacksmith thing. Is it possible that the hand is the blacksmith or Nobu is the blacksmith? Could they be the people? And that's just like the very easy way of tying these stories together.
Definitely possible. Or Stick could be the blacksmith. Who knows? Who knows what's happening?
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would hope it's someone that we've seen. I hope it's.
Why would Stick do that? Because like heroin would boost his funds for his war against the hand, and it's just like he would consider that a necessary evil.
There you go. Yeah, I think you just explained why Stick could very well be the blacksmith.
Yeah, he would have no moral problem with that.
Well, no, because for him, it's for a greater cause. There's a greater good here.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting idea. All right, put him on the list of suspects. So let's look at the list of suspects right now. Let's just line it up so that we have it. Blake is a suspect.
Yes.
Stick is a suspect.
Yes.
Let's just say Nobu. Let's just say Nobu the Hound.
Yeah.
The hound. I meant the hand. I'm already in Game of Thrones mode, everybody.
I thought you were 100% doing Game of Thrones.
And
jokes.
Sandor the Hound, you know, Clegane, yeah, is exactly. He is the blacksmith. That is
just doing that like Arya mantra, just like Stick. Yeah. Madame Gao.
The hound. Yeah. Do we want to put Gao on the list? Gao Ross? Or
no,
is she,
no, no. Yeah, I think she's out. I think she's out.
All right. So we've got three prime suspects right now. And then I guess the fourth would just be ? Random Nando. Actually Random Nando, but just some random person.
Yeah. Not like willy-nilly who passed away at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. R.I.P. We haven't talked about him in a while, but I think that's just because the memory is still too fresh and painful.
Yes. Yeah. It's difficult to speak of willy-nilly.
I love this next scene at the diner. Like, the first half of the diner scene, I really love. I love the second half, too, of course.
I was going to say, do you not like the
I love both halves. They're great. But I love the first half of the diner scene because it's like love line with Dr. Frank. You know, it's like, it's Frank Castle doing his best Dr. Drew and giving love advice to Karen Page. And it's just so strange to see him in this context.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, but it's a guy who, you know, obviously had love and very much cared about it and had it ripped away from him. So when he sees someone, I guess, making the choice to not embrace it and not take it and have it in their life, you know, he's going to try to convince them otherwise. That all said,
he's such
I don't
a
know.
Softy, this Frank Castle.
Yeah, when he's not bashing people's face in with his fists.
Yeah, I guess.
I will say I know what they're doing here, but I don't know. I kind of like this whole thing where it's just kind of like, oh, you love him, and I'm like, man, they went on like three dates. Like, I know, like, I'm not the best person to talk about when to bust out the L word. I'm like Spencer practically when it comes to that stuff. But it's just. I was like, just calm down.
Karen agrees with you.
Well, yeah.
Karen agrees with you, too. Yeah, Karen's like, I mean, come on. Like, you know, this stuff that you were looking on my face, it's a swirl of feelings. It's a lot of things. It's not love. It's a bunch of ingredients.
That sounds like, you know, the denial doth protest too much, which we've seen. That's the reason why I feel like it is a denial situation is because we've seen a billion and one shows and movies and stuff that does the same thing where someone's just like, yeah, I love him. And it's like, no, I don't. Or the other way around. Just like, dude, you love her. No, I don't. You know, whatever. It's the same style of things. So like the inclination is just to be like, she's in denial about that. And I'm kind of like, ugh, like one, too soon. Two, can't, I don't agree with her because, like, in the sense of, like, Matt didn't, you know, there was no explanation about what she walked in on.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, again, not that she needs one, but I would much prefer it if, like, that happened. And she's like, you know what? Matt's a dick. Like, just from the way he's been acting and just be like, eh, we went on a few dates. He's a bit of a dick, especially recently. Screw it. And just doesn't have that, like, you don't, just because people need to be shipped, and, you know, like, in a thing that you set up, doesn't mean they always have to stay that way. Like, it's just one of those things that's just so tropey and cliche that I it kind of bugs me when they go this route on this show.
No argument over here.
Ran over, I guess.
Ran over, no argument over here. I won't engage it any further. One of the things that I do like in this scene, I just love everything Frank Castle in this scene. Like, I love...
Oh, how, yeah, agreed wholeheartedly.
I love how Frank is talking to the server and being like, ma'am, more coffee. I'm just going to need every bit of coffee that you have. He's like, yeah. It's like Ron Swanson for coffee. Like, give me all the bacon and eggs you have. Give me all the black coffee that you have. Son, yeah. I don't think you're understanding me. I said all the coffee. It's just so great in the way that he's talking to her and how
Frank
he talks.
Frank
Swanson. I like how he talks about her choice in weapon. That's the 380 that the episode gets its title from is what Karen was holding against him in the episode previous. And he's saying like a lot of people when they buy guns who know nothing about guns, they usually buy quote unquote shiny shit or something too powerful to use, something with like a huge kick, but a 380 shows thought maybe this isn't your first rodeo,
right?
We know it's not because she killed old Wesley.
Yes.
And I don't remember. I wish that before we had gotten on here that I'd gone back and reviewed the tape. But is that Wesley's gun that she has?
I thought she got rid of Wesley's gun.
Did she get rid of Wesley's gun?
I thought she tossed it. Yeah. If it is Wesley's gun, that is stupid to keep that gun. Yeah. Like,
and I don't remember. I don't recall.
If she's using it for self-defense, that is dumb.
Yeah. Like, neither here nor there, but I was just wondering about that.
Yeah,
but
I'm pretty sure she tossed it. It's New York. Just go to the river and throw it in there. There's a lot of stuff in there.
You know, yeah, including that poor guy's head. But again, no spoilers. Aww. No spoilers. But we have this line, and we have this episode is called 380, and it's talking about Karen's gun, and that gun does not go off in this episode. But is that gun going to go off before this thing is over?
Do you think it's a Chekhov's gun? I guess a Karov's gun?
A Karov's gun? Yeah. Karam's gun? Yeah, I feel like that's what, you know, you don't put that in the drawer unless you're going to pull the trigger on that. And I feel like it's a topic of conversation here. It's important enough to be the name of the episode unless you have another interpretation for why this episode is called 380. Do we come full circle and just go a little tiny bit past full circle? Like, is that why it's called 380?
The plot lines come together and go full circle, I guess. Yes, because things get tied in really, really heavily here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I think the gun may go off eventually. I think if not this season, there'll be a plot point like she's going to shoot someone in the future again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you bring about a good point, though. You know, again, it's the Chekhov's gun theory. Don't show a gun in the first act if it's not going to be used in the third.
Talk about that a lot here in post show recaps, and it's just something that we're trained to do. You got to look at that gun. You got to see what Chekhov is putting in the drawer, and you just got to assume it's going to come out in some capacity, maybe in a way that you don't expect.
That could be a facile argument, Cyril.
Yeah.
That's an Archer reference. Someone might get that.
Yeah, I wish I was an Archer guy. I'm not an Archer guy. Mistake. Unless we're talking about Hawkeye or Oliver Queen. Another line that I like from Frank Castle when he's talking to Karen about love, and like Karen's denying it, and Frank like asks the server, ma'am, do you guys always serve bullshit here, or is it just her?
Which also is kind of a little mean, like, cause from the server, I assume, is not eavesdropping, right. And all of a sudden she's been bringing this guy coffee, and then he just busts like, out. Yeah,
with, this you coffee guys is bullshit terrible. Here?
It's just like, ah, geez, Frank.
Yeah, very harsh, Frank, way harsh, Frank. We got the Chinatown scene that starts to happen in between the two diner scenes, but we may as well just keep going with the diner really quickly. Frank hears people showing up, or he sees that the car outside has circled around three times. He's like, yeah, so things are about to get really bad. You should go in. And Carol's like, you used me as bait. He's like, yeah. I am the Punisher.
Yeah, I'm not a great guy.
I'm not a great guy. Like, I have my moments.
Yeah.
So she's not happy about that. the killers, they show up. They're here to take care of business. They get taken care of instead in gruesome, gnarly, gnarly, gnarly fashion.
Oh, yeah. It is a brutal, brutal encounter, especially that last guy. As Karen and the waitress are there listening to all of this, which... gross. Like, hearing... I can't imagine, like, being Karen, hearing that guy's face get basically busted in.
Oh, it's so bad. Like, I mean, a lot of things happen. I mean, he smashes coffee into somebody's face. He stabs one guy just, like, a million times in the chest. Just has no problem popping that guy in the head. And then he just is... Yeah, he's just, like, beating the other guy in the face over and over again. So you see that, like, his cheek is hanging off.
Yeah, no, he, you know, Frank wants information, the guy's not going to give it to him, so he beats his face in.
It's so gross.
Yeah, it's very gross, and then he gives him the information, and then Frank shoots him in the head.
That's the Punisher for you.
Yeah, that's what he does. That's how he works, you know, this is why, you know, he's a vigilante, but I don't necessarily, like, vigilante invokes a different image in my head.
He's a scary guy.
Scary guy.
But the show does a great job with him, Kevin. Like, the show here, like, when he does that, it's, you're not, like, basking in the glory of the moment. You're basking in the gory of it. Like, it's a really grotesque thing, and Karen sees it. And Karen, who's a character that we're, you know, meant to empathize with and sympathize with and mostly agree with her view of the world, I think, she sees this, and she's the person who's been Team Punisher the most by far out of any of our main characters, and she's like stopping short of vomiting. New guy's in the back puking her guts out, and she's not doing that, but she's close. And Punisher, who's just standing there wheezing because he's so tired from having just kicked the crap out of these two guys and killed these two guys, he just like sounds gross. He just sounds awful, and he says to her, "Get away from this thing. Get away from me. Stay away from me." It's not like a beautiful thing. It's not like a hell yeah Punisher moment. It's like a, oh man, Punisher. And I think that that's been the approach to the character this season, and that's why the Punisher has been awesome. So Matt visits Madame Gao, and yeah, she's doing her Gao Ross thing, putting happy little trees in the canvas. It's very
and some
sweet.
Happy little liquid in her drink.
Yeah, a little happy little liquid in her drink, and giving Matt some happy little information about the blacksmith who wants to become the market and all of this stuff. And she says, "Our interests are aligned for the moment."
Yeah, yeah, I'm very glad to see her. I'm hoping that we're going to get more, because the last time we saw her, she was leaving and said, "You probably won't see," you know, it was to Leland, and said, "You know, you will not see me for a while." Part of me wonders if there's a thing here that the guy we're seeing has been missing in her timeline for some bit. And she's back here now, but it's actually been much longer for her.
Right.
I'm very curious to see how that plays out.
Because there's lots of theories that Madame Gao relates to Iron Fist and Kun Lun, which is a mystical city, and things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, Iron Fist is casting up right now. They just they have like two Game of Thrones actors on Iron Fist right now.
Yeah, because the main character is Loras Tyrell.
Yeah, Loras Tyrell and one of the Sand Snakes. Nymeria Sand is playing, oh, I don't know the name of the character off the top of my head.
Colleen Wing.
Yes, that's the one.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
which is very exciting.
So that's cool. That's happening. But yeah, we don't really see much from Gao other than this, you know, quick little scene. Maybe we'll see more of her. I assume we'll see more of her in Marvel, if not here in Daredevil.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is clearly a character that they're going to utilize as, I think, much more.
Yeah. Before we go to the pier, which is going to be the big action scene, we have Claire, you know, we talked about Claire dropping the mic earlier in the season. This is Claire really dropping the mic, where she is told that this is, you know, this is strike two. You know, you had your thing with the Jessica Jones of it all, and now you're, you know, putting up a thing here where you had all these patients here who were admitted unorthodoxly. Like, it wasn't legal what you did. And it, again, in Walter Peck's defense, that's fair, but the cover up is kind of BS, and Claire is just like, yeah, I'm not just going to stand here and let you cover up the fact that my friend Luisa Naparguita got killed and just be happy about it. I quit. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Yeah, no.
Let's just call this strike three.
Yeah, I definitely see it more as her, you know, the half-baked moment of, you know, F you, F you, F you, you're cool, F you, I'm out.
But like, none of them are cool. Not even,
yeah, none of them were cool. There's just a lot of FUs.
Not even Shirley. I mean, Shirley is the coolest one there because, like, she fought for Claire's job, but, like, she is also just being like, but I need to keep my job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some of us can't just quit their jobs and leave forever.
I know. It's fair. Fair point. But yeah, you would like to think that when there's, like, this monster ninja thing happening, that, like, you would call it into question a little bit.
Sure, but Shirley doesn't know all the information. Surely she doesn't know all the information.
But Claire has quit the hospital, and who knows where that's going to take her in the future. She leaves the hospital with Foggy Nelson and basically says, yeah, your buddy's going to have to find a new nurse.
Yeah, and she's going to go to meet up with Luke Cage, is my prediction.
Okay, that would be cool. I'm down for that.
Yeah, I'm definitely down for that.
The more Claire, the better. All right, let's get into the pier. This is all really fun stuff. Punisher shooting lots of people, as he does. He thinks that he finds the blacksmith. He obviously has not found the blacksmith.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, kind of Matt calls him on it, is that he just wants this person to be the person, just so he can, in a way, it is like, Frank is kind of tired, like, I think Frank is drained from all of this stuff, and so he just wants the answer to almost, like, just mentally just be like, just tell me you're the guy so I can stop this.
Right. Yeah, it's like the Memento thing. It's like, I don't care. Like, I don't care if this is the blacksmith or not, I just need, like, some peace.
Yeah, but which, you know, also Memento, not great at how that ends for him and how that story goes.
No spoilers, but things
That's why I try to avoid saying anything. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies.
No things happen. You know, we're not saying anything.
Yeah.
But we have Matt, he's talking to Frank. They fight a little bit because that's what you do when you're the Punisher and Daredevil. But he has an interesting line where he's saying, like, my way is not working. Maybe just once, let's try it your way.
And so this is the part that I kind of talked about earlier in the podcast about I'm unsure about in the direction you're going to go. I mean, we see him give the sign of the cross as he says this because he knows he's about to sin in what he's saying.
It's a great character moment.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to see how it plays out moving forward. I don't know. Matt Murdock has this character element about no murder, and I mean, technically, I guess he won't be murdering anyone.
But he's, like, greenlighting the Punisher to do it.
Yeah.
I don't have to save you either.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, like, I won't kill you, but I don't have to save you, which is a very divisive Batman thing. But, you know,
These days, looks pretty tame.
Yes, these days. Oh, how times have changed. Anyway, these times are changing.
Anyway, I don't think we have to worry about it too much until something happens. We can cross that line if Matt crosses that line. Frank is the guy who's saying, like, if you cross that line, if you come over to my side, you never come back from that. Interesting to get those words of wisdom from Frank Castle. And Frank Castle is the guy who pushes Daredevil off the boat. And you could see it being like it's an aggro thing where he wants to take the thing on completely on his own. Or there's a read on it that's like, I'm saving you from doing something you do not want to get involved in.
Yeah, it's quite possible. And because, like, you know, the whole conversation on the roof, they've talked, they've had these moments together. And, you know, on one hand, like, it's like Frank seeing that that Daredevil could be coming around to his side, he's realizing, like, no, we need people like you. We need heroes like you. Let me be this guy.
Right.
You know, I'm not the hero this city deserves, but I'm the hero it needs right now.
Right, and you're the one it deserves. And, like, yes. I think that that's cool. I like that. I like the way that their relationship has developed. I thought that this was a really great scene between the two of them. But in terms of Matt killing, I don't want to worry about it until we get there. But, the flag has been planted, and there is definitely set up on the show. And I think that we've been building in that direction for a little while. Is Matt about to do something he's really going to regret if he crosses that line? I think that that's where we've been going with Matt burning the candle on both ends and seeing that he let a guy like Nobu, you know, he thought that Nobu died, but Nobu came back, and, like, his way is just not going to work with something like that. And I think that we have seen that Matt has been facing off with that possible demon. So if the show is moving in that direction, curious to see what the ultimate choice would be. But I think that we've been watching Matt Murdock slowly walk up to that edge, and the question is, which side of the line is he going to stay on? Is he going to stay where he has been, or is he going to take the plunge? And you might end up having a problem with that from a character standpoint in terms of the comics, but if they pull it off in an artful way, you know, let's be open-minded to it. So we just don't know. We have no idea yet.
Yeah, look, I'm just going to say, too, like, it depends on what comes next. Like, if he does it, I think, you know, it's a huge moment. I think what you said is perfectly reasonable, that they've been leading up to it. They're going to the edge. I would love if he doesn't. If he does, what comes next is really what's the big thing. Like, how does he act? How does it affect him as a person, as a character? What changes happen? Like, those are the important things. That's, like, one of the reasons, you know, jumping backwards to something else, that I didn't mind Superman killing Zod, but they did not handle the follow-up correctly.
Right.
And so it all depends on how they handle the follow-up here. I'm not against it happening. I just, you have to handle it properly.
This show, I think, has earned our goodwill. You know,
oh, 100%,
we're
yeah.
11 episodes.
I have faith.
Yeah, we're 11 episodes into season two, and it's all been great so far. All right, so that's what's going on. Frank gets into a firefight with the people who show up. One of them says it's been a long time.
I thought you were going to miss this. And I was like, did Josh miss this?
Who is that? Do we know who that is?
I don't know. We don't know.
All right, well.
It might be the John Doe.
Yeah, it could be the John Doe. That would be interesting. Yeah, what if the John Doe? I mean, that's a no-brainer. It's like the undercover cop is the blacksmith.
It's the blacksmith. I mean, that's definitely possible, but it's a reasonable answer. It's just one of those things where it's like, oh, we've never seen him.
But we've been hearing about the John Doe a lot. So I'm open to that. Like, if it's just the John Doe, that's pretty cool too, I think.
Yeah, I would not be against it at all.
So let's call it the John Doe. He is now officially on the suspect list. Yes, we're watching you, John. We're watching you. All right, so we have a little bit going on with Stick. Stick shows up here. He finds out that Elektra killed the Frenchman. He has a great line. He's like, oh, Jacques screwed the pooch. What an asshole.
Yeah. And now knowing what you said, that maybe, like, he wasn't there to kill her, maybe it's exactly that. Like, even Stick is just like, you weren't supposed to. Come on, Jacques, you know.
Yeah. Very funny. So he knows that Elektra is working her way up and is going to be coming for him. So he sends his two men outside with some stuff. He's like, if there's going to be a tomorrow for anyone, you guys have to follow the plan. Go get me what I need. So they go outside and obviously just get immediately killed by Elektra.
Well, one of them gets immediately killed. We think the other guy gets killed, but no, he is apparently awesome enough to just be like, I'm going to drive to... You know, Matt Murdock's
house.
Yeah, and just goes bleeding, smashing into other cars. But he makes it. He makes it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, because Matt, he got thrown off the boat when he shows up and all the police are at the scene at the pier. He hears that Karen is there and she's upset about Frank. Matt eventually goes back to the penthouse, goes back to his apartment. He's kind of just like looking at the ground being like, what's wrong with my life? How did we get here? And he hears the car outside and he sees that the guy who's just like gurgling blood, he's just like farty face dying on, you know, in the scene, and is like, oh, Elektra is back. Oh, God. And so we know that Matt is going to figure out that Elektra is coming after Stick, and that's getting set up, and Elektra and Stick are about to face off at the end of the episode. So much like how last episode ended with a ninja cliffhanger that got paid off in the first scene of this episode, I certainly hope that we have an Elektra Stick battle to kick off episode 12.
It would be cool. Hopefully Stick doesn't die.
Hopefully not. That would be terrible. Not impossible. I loved the way that like Stick was just like preparing his sword and just like he was obviously coating it in a poison or something, right?
Oh, was he? I thought he was just sharpening it because you use a whetstone to sharpen katanas.
Well, that could also be it. I don't know that.
Yeah, no, that's how you're supposed to sharpen katanas, is using a whetstone.
Wow. How many katanas have you sharpened, Kevin?
I own a few.
Do you really?
Yeah, I own a few katanas.
Wow. I don't have Kevin Mahadeo.
I don't have them here in L.A. because it's hard to,
well, what's
one,
the
put
point
them on a
owning
plane.
Katanas if you don't have them with you all the time?
I used to. I had them in New York and I had them in Florida. But then, like, you know, oh, hey, you know, company, ship over this weaponry and let me bring it onto the plane. Like, it was a hassle. And I was like, I'll just leave them in Florida for now.
All right. Well, figure that out. I want to see those katanas with my own two eyes the next time I see you in L.A., which is probably not going to happen because that's happening pretty soon.
Yeah. One day
I would like to see Kevin Mahadeo with a sword. I think we all would. We'd like to see that on Instagram or something. That would be fun.
Yeah, I'll have to see if there's any pictures.
One scene that we missed is the vampire kids, not vampire kids. They went back to the hand and everything, and we watch Nobu slice this guy's like hand almost halfway off, and they're just bleeding back into the baths. And Nobu says, now it's ready. You know, he's holding that gigantic urn again, and we don't know what that is, but whatever that is, it's ready for use. So that's ominous.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what it's going to be. I'm sure that reveal is coming up real quick.
Yeah. Anyway, we said that this might be a shorter one, but this is like an hour into this thing.
Yeah, it ended up our usual length.
Well, we ramble, and that's what happens. But Chess Pieces episode, lots of things got interestingly moved forward. So these final two episodes were posed. For, you know, we're in a really good spot, I think, for things to really blow up. We'll see what direction that goes in. I'm very excited. Episode 12 is called The Dark at the End of the Tunnel. That doesn't sound like it's going to be especially pleasant.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's, I mean, the dark at the end of the tunnel is, you know, obviously the inverse of the usual saying. So not great.
Yeah.
But if you're Matt Murdock, you wouldn't be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel anyway. So.
Well, yeah. So who knows? Who knows what that's going to be? But we will get into that tomorrow as our Daredevil podcast is starting to draw to a close. Hashtag time is Gal Ross. You like
Gal
that?
Ross. Gal Ross. See, that's the one I'm naturally going to go toward.
Gal Ross was good. Batman Swing was an early front runner, but I think
Batman Swing is also solid. But that's a different franchise.
Yeah, that's for something else. Gal Ross, give us that GAO Ross. Follow Kevin on Twitter at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. We'll be back tomorrow with episode 12, The Dark at the End of the Tunnel of Daredevil, talking about that episode. Take care, everybody. A goodbye.
Woo!